Oh, hi. It's you again. How lovely to see you. Before we get started with this week's episode, I need to let you know our spring sale is on. The Mega Warehouse Mega Sale. There's 5,000 items that are 15% off. Nearly every VI product is 20% off. And we just added this weekend, all VI produced downloads are 25% off. So head along to vanishinginkmagic.com/sale. And you'll notice there's a little handy filtering system on the left. So you can filter by category, by product type. You can select downloads and it'll just show you the VI downloads at 25% off. This is going to end very soon. So if you're listening to this in the future, sorry, you've missed it. But if you're listening to this today on Monday, the 14th of March, consider yourself told. Get over to vanishinginkmagic.com/sale right now and save money. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of The Insider, brought to you, and this is going to sound really weird, but it's brought to you by Vanishing Ink. Oh, I know, just for a change. My guest today moves things and makes them float, and he's done that for a jolly, jolly long time. It's Yigal Masika. Yigal, how are you this afternoon?
Hey, I'm good, thank you. How's it going, Damon?
Very good, but it's a quick show. There is no time for pleasantries. What's your magic origin story? You've got 27 seconds.
Well, I got into magic when I was 10 years old. My mom took me to a variety show, and all of the performers, I forgot who they are or what they do, but one guy just got into my mind. He was a magician, and when I seen it when I was a boy, I thought this is real. I didn't know what's the magic tricks, and that's kind of... inspired me, you know. When I seen it, I felt like, wow, life has so much to offer. That is, it just showed me like a sense of wonder.
Yeah, and I felt,
you know, this guy can do everything possible.
Do you remember anything that he did?
Yeah. The first things that really got me, he produced the ovs. Uh-huh. I forgot about that section, but in the end, he vanished all the doves. He says, you know, I'm going to give you the doves as a gift. So he covered the cage with the fabric. And he hold the cage with the dove and toss it away, and they all gone. And I thought, wow, this is like fascinating.
How cool.
That's got me.
That's really cool that you remember the specifics.
And you know what? The funny things, like about a year later, I find out that this magician was living in my neighborhood, and he had a warehouse where he built all the magics. And he asked my friends and me to help him out one day. And as we help him out, and we got one trick, magic trick, you know, each one. And I tried it in school. Everybody loved it. And I became his apprentice. And I came every day after school to help him crafting magic and learning about the process, how to invent and how to develop and how to produce. And that's what I did all my childhood.
Oh, man, that's so cool. The guy that inspired you, you ended up learning from. That's amazing and rare.
And he was the most famous magician in Israel. His name is Faust. And he was one of the pioneers, you know. He has all kind of illusions, and that's what he did for a living. And as a boy, I looked him up, and I felt like, wow, you know, you can do a living out of being a magician. And that's what inspired me.
That's so cool. Let's talk about the art of levitation. Mm-hmm. How... and why did you get into it? Who inspired you to follow that path?
It's a great question. The first things I seen was a Finn John video when I was about 14. And my English, I didn't know even how to say good morning. Or good. I was very young and my English was broken. And when I seen his video, he explained how to do the floating bill and different things. But at that time, magic was secretive. So he didn't teach even with a rubber band or something visible so you can see it.
Oh.
And the video didn't come with loops, so I didn't have the loops. But as I'm watching this, I felt like the explanation is impressive as the magic. And I didn't know how it's done, but a friend of mine had one package of loops, and he has one last loop. And when I went to his house and he showed me that, I was very fascinated. And when I hold it and it just snapped out of my hand, I felt like so terribly sorry. And I find a way how to... make loops myself, because I always, you know, since I was a boy, I was developing and making those things. And what happened, I heard that it's possible to get it out of stocking from the ladies. So I took my mom's stocking and I start to break it apart, start taking strings. And then I tie it some way and tie it this way and that way and play with it all day long till I found a way to make one loop. Then as I'm playing with that...
Hang on, that was one day. You figured out the...
Yeah, it took like, you know, took time. I told my friend, hey, don't worry, I'll get you that loop that I broke. I will get it back to you. So make long story short, when I got into the stocking and I got one loop and I made it and I came like a week later to him and I got him a bunch of loops and he loved it. He was like so surprised and so amazed. And he was like very amazed how I've been able to tie it or make a loop.
Mm.
But out of his amazement and other friends' amazement, I felt like, wow, I'm into something that they don't know.
I've got something. Yeah.
But to me, it was simple. To me, it was, yeah, but what's the big deal? And then as I see the reactions, I got more into that. And then I start to playing with it all day long, moving forks and spoons and start to play with the hunted pack and different vibrations because I have nobody to teach me. So I had to come up with my own ideas.
Mm.
And as I come
up with my own ideas,
that was, wow, I was 14 years old. Only a few years ago.
Last week.
Yeah, so long. Can't believe it. Almost 30 years. Yeah, more than 30 years ago.
So you're quite isolated then in Israel, and there was nobody else doing that kind of work?
Threadwork. Yeah, magic was very popular in a way of the stage magic. Everybody did boxes and illusions. And,
right.
Doves was very popular, dove act. And I was, as a boy, doing, you know, classic magic, you know, all the flowers and the silks and producing different things. And that was things that I loved to do. But the thread work was just a side daily things you can do for audiences and have fun, just as impromptu effects. Yeah. And as I'm doing that, and I realize people love that, and I get so much good reactions. And that's got me, one idea spark another idea, and that's got me involved into doing close-up, like very up-close magic that seemed as real magic, you know? And as I go with the years, I realize, wow, it's not that I had a vision since I was a boy and I was like, okay, let's do that. It's one idea spark another idea, and then you find yourself finding a genre that I never thought about.
Yeah. I vividly, my uncle got me into magic and got me Royal Road when I was 11, so very long time ago. But when I was about 15, at one Christmas gathering, he floated a bill for me. And I'd never seen anything like it. Now I know that he'd anchored the thread to the deck and put the deck down and the thread was going there, you know. But at the time, I was like, well, there's a thread. And then he did this. And I was like, there's no thread. And so I'm looking round and round like this, and it's floating. And it felt the closest to 15-year-old me to real magic as anything I'd ever experienced. Why do you think it is that it hits that hard? I can still, it still gives me goosebumps thinking about that memory now, a long time ago.
Yeah.
So why do you think levitation resonates and hits so hard with ordinary people?
I think there is many answers to that, but to try to make it simple, it's so visually strong and it fits all languages. You don't have, you know, you can speak Chinese or, you know, Hebrew or English, and you can still enjoy the visual. It's you're breaking the law of physics when you see something like that is completely break all the law of physics, and it's like so amazing that you float something and you show that there's no way that something attached to it, and it's create that moment that like you experience something new that you never seen before, and it hits so visually strong, and it creates impossible. As a magician, we create the impossible, and that's what it is.
There you go.
Yeah.
Tell us about the history of loops. So Finn John was the first. So how did it go from that to where we are now?
Yeah, Finn John is the inventor of loops, you know. I owe him like a big credit for come up with this brilliant idea. And when I was young, I come up with my own ideas how to make the loops with better quality, with better handling, with different effects. And years later, I've been going to conventions and show it to magicians. And they said to me, you know, if you want to make this popular, you need to buy permission from Finn John. And once you buy the permission, that would be great. You can sell it worldwide and you can make great money and make magician using these amazing things. And I thought, wow, this is a great idea. I'll give it a try. So I find out that he has an agent. So I contact his agent and we talked and he says, okay, we can talk more about this. And when I talked to them about the pricing and they've been willing to sell the rights to promote this because they love what I do and they felt, you know, I'm really passionate and very young. And Fiend was very busy with doing performing and shows. Mm. And his mind wasn't into a product development. He didn't have the time and the resources. And that wasn't his passion.
Yeah.
So he was willing to sell me the rights to get the exclusive rights worldwide and to start manufacture that and sell it to magicians. So I felt very fortunate to get the rights. And I remember after I got the rights and we signed the contract, I was young. I was 21 years old. So we went to a restaurant in Paris and we had a great time. And after we signed the contract and everything, I showed him some magic and everything I showed him was with loops. And then he goes like, oh my God, don't tell me you did it with loops now. And I'm like, that's all I've been using is loops. And he's like,
so you fooled, you fooled the creator of loops.
No, it wasn't Finjo.
By using
his,
loops.
Agent. It was his agent.
Okay.
So he was like really shocked that the whole things you can do with loops, you know, moving different heavy objects and
yeah,
the hunted pack and really like with this invisible strength, like so invisible, you can move like heavy object and do amazing things. And he was like, wow, I couldn't believe that you can do all those things. So that was exciting, you know, that he gave me the green light to share these ideas.
Yeah.
And being amazed and appreciated as well, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think probably everybody listening to this and magicians all around the world have tried out, have played with your loops, from professionals to hobbyists, TV work all around the world, down to somebody's house doing a haunted deck at the end of the night. How does it feel to have produced something so insanely popular that has lasted the test of time? What does that feel like?
It's a good question. To be honest, I started doing it since I was a boy. So, and when I was 21, I started selling it. So it was very exciting first to get the permission from someone that it was like my hero, you know? When I watched Finn John, he was, you know, the godfather of Invisible Thread. And I loved, you know, what he shared. And then being part of that and allowed to share magic of magicians, you know, worldwide and see their appreciations. It's always make me feel great. And I feel grateful and blessed to be part of, you know what I mean, this journey. It's difficult to describe in a word how happy I am with this, but it's allowed me also with time to explore different ideas and to expand on that field. And
different ideas like this is going to be really good for audio listeners. Different ideas like this little chap here, your new spider pen X.
Mm-hmm.
Now it is slim, it's elegant, and it's very clever. Can you talk us through the journey from the original spider pen?
Mm-hmm.
When did that come out?
That came out in 2004,
right, okay. So talk us through the journey from that one in 2004 to this one here now.
Yeah. So I will go a little bit back so people can get a sense of history. Before the spider pen was something called ITR, Invisible Thread Reel, which been very popular and every magician has one. And I had one as well when I was young, when I was about 15, 16, I was exploring with this idea and I was performing a lot and I had technical difficulties when the thread was very visible and it's breaking and it's a nightmare to fix it. But overall, the concept was great. So, so with the years, I always thought, you know, wouldn't it be great if it was something more invisible or something more easy. And if it breaks, you can fix it quickly and so on and on and on. And when I got into product development and working with threads, I've been playing one day with an invisible thread reel that was existing on something on the market. And then I said, wouldn't it be great if it would be electronics? So as I'm playing with one idea, I think it was I tried to fit it into a cylinder, okay. And then the cylinder got smaller. And when it got smaller, I realized, wow, this is, looks great, like very small. But what would I do with that? You know, like mm-hmm. how can I make the object more like a daily object that people can...
Organic.
Yeah, organic. And then I said, oh, this looks like a cap of a pen. So let's put a clip to it.
Was that it?
So I put the clip to it. And then I got the pen and I couldn't push the pen inside. So I said, how can I push the pen inside the cap? And then I remember when I was a boy, when I had a costume with like kind of a fighter or something, and I had the knife, that the knife was springy. So I made the pen kind of springy. So when you push it into the cap, make long story short, I came up with the first variation and I sold it to magicians, and the reaction was like phenomenal and everybody loved it. And I realized that I'm up to something. And mm-hmm. as I'm selling many, I start to develop it and get it better and better and better. And, you know, for like 15 years or more, it's been always refinement in terms of the quality, in terms of the performance, in terms of the effects. All of those years allow me to do that.
Right.
Yeah. And the new one is all like completely different level, you know?
It really is, because one of the...
I felt I went a little bit...
With nothing... Go on, with nothing but love, the first one ate batteries like I eat chocolate, and I'd forget to turn it off, and I'd come back, and it'd be like, oh, man, I just wanted to do it, and now there's no batteries, and I haven't got any of the stupid little batteries that you needed. Was it difficult to solve that problem with this? What was the... Were you sat there thinking, how can I fix the battery problem?
Yeah, that was, oh, wow. That was many sleepless nights, years of development to make this happening, because the new one is a microchip that knows... it has no switches. So you cannot forget or need to remember any click on button like the old one. The old one is electronic. Mm-hmm. The new one is digital. It doesn't have any button, okay. Doesn't have any switches. You pull the thread, it's activate the motor, it give you the all retractions. It's almost like you have a big, you know, loop or ITR, but works
infinitely.
Yeah, you can pull up to 40 feet, and when it comes back, it shuts off by itself. You don't have to click on anything. So doing the software, doing the electronics, doing the slickness of the pen, doing the whole product development, the effects, everything takes years of refinement and exploring so many ideas and prototypes to get it where it is. You know, I could do something like the iPhone and every year selling another type of iPhone, but I'm not there to get the magician money. I'm like, yeah, of course, I'm happy to make more profit. But at the same time, I want to give the best of the best quality, something that wasn't there for me when I was a boy. When I was a boy, I seen a lot of advertising that was false advertising. That me as a magician that making products, when I was a boy, I did those magic for myself because my parents couldn't buy me any magic because we didn't know if there was any magic shop. And yeah, so I had to explore and develop those magic for myself out of necessity. So when I start to develop those things, I realize what's good quality, what's a bad quality. And when I bought something and I have to spend $200 or $300, it wasn't exactly what the marketing said it is. It was very disappointing. Mm-hmm. So when I start making magic, I didn't want people to feel that experience. I wanted to be so happy that when they get my product, they have 3 months guarantee. If they don't like it for any reason, they get the money back, no question asked. That's my policy for the last 7 years.
That's the confidence that you have.
Yeah, I'm doing it for the last 7 years on my website. There is a statement. You can buy the products worldwide, any shop. If you're not happy for any reason, you get the money back, no question asked. And I want people to even buy two of them. Have one that you use all the time and another one backup, just in case something, you know, you lost one.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's a great feeling. From all that 7 years, I get only one return. Only one return in 7 years.
That's testament to the quality of the product you put out, isn't
it,
really?
Thank you.
That's amazing. Can we, as I've got you, can we get into some specifics about thread? Mm-hmm. What do you think are some common mistakes that people make when working with thread initially?
I think the number one mistake that people do, they float an object and they forget. It's difficult to explain, but I see two type of magicians. Someone who floats something and okay. It seems like really happening, like for real, is really floating it. Mm-hmm. And you enjoy it as an audience and you feel like, wow, this is so amazing. You don't want to even know how it's done. You just enjoy that real magic. And then I see another type of magicians that doing the same effect with the same handling, with the same tooling, but you know there is something. You know there is a thread or there is something and you feel like, ah, this is a trick. And the big difference is it's almost like the magician that doing it the best is the one forgetting the thread and focusing on the magic. So the thread is not there. Yeah, you can see it, but you have to act like it's not there. To your facial expressions, to your body expression, everything you have to communicate that it's really floating. And once you signal that, people start to telegraph that kind of back and forth bouncing kind of telecommunication. Mm-hmm. And then they feel like this is really happening. But if you look like you look this way and that way on the string and you float it and you start to act that way, it just doesn't look the same.
Game over.
So the number one is to forget the thread.
So it's that you believe yourself that it's
To forget the thread completely. I know it's difficult kind of to trick yourself, but you're doing it for a purpose of entertaining. It's not like you saying, oh, look at me, I have a supernatural power and now I can heal you. It's not that. We're doing it for just enjoyment and pleasure, you know, to create a sense of wonder.
Of course.
So I think it's okay to lie to ourselves, to see that it's really floating and it's amazing for 1 second or 2 seconds. And create that special moment, you know?
For somebody new to thread that's listening to this, how do you work out or know whether the lighting environment is appropriate for you to do that sort of work?
Yeah, I think it depends on the apparatus. If you use loops, it's safer than using other apparatus. Spiderpin has the finest invisible thread. It fits almost every surrounding of lights. But sometimes there is a lights that reflect and it has a lot of reflection. Fluorescent is great because it has that diffusion, so it's more dimmed. So when I go to a room, I look, you know, I see the light, and when I pull the string, I see if it has a lot of reflection or not. If it has reflection.
So you actually do a little test.
Of course, yeah.
Say it's a loop. You'll do a little test and look around, check the environment, and then you'll know where to position
Absolutely,
yourself.
Absolutely, yeah. There is some different rules and ideas that you can use that can help you diffuse the invisible thread, make it more invisible in a way that, let's say if you use loops, you can use a shirt that there's some diffusion, you know, like it's textured.
Oh, like a patterned
shirt. Yes, exactly. So that's diffuse, you know, the light from not seeing the thread. Or sometimes if I move an object, I will do it on the floor because usually the floor has a lot of distraction, it's not smooth. So I will do it on the floor if I move the glasses or I move the fork or I do the hunted pack. Usually don't do it down the floor. But with lighting, my number one rule, stay away 5 feet away from the light. If the light above, stay 5 feet either forward or backwards from the light. If the light is go above the head, it's not good because it's reflect on the thread. But if you stay 5 feet backwards or forward, you are in a better stage.
Perfect. Yeah. That's a fantastic tip. When you're out at the bar or friends for dinner or something, what's your go-to? What's your favorite thing to do?
That's a tough question. I have a bunch.
You must have one that you do more than others, you go.
I like to start with something that suits the moment or the environment, you know. Let's say if someone asks me, hey, can you hand me this napkin, please? So I'll say, hey, can I show you something with that napkin? And then I will do something with a napkin and it seems like it's happened out of the blue. And it's not like stage. It's not like, let me show you something. It is someone that hold these glasses in his hand and look at them. And I'll say, hey, can I borrow the glasses for something? I want to show you something special. And then I will do the things with the glass and go like, oh my God, you know, he will know that I wasn't prepared. I just did it like spontaneously.
Yeah. And then, so you will jump off whatever's happening in the in the environment.
Yeah, I like to find that movement that give me the right start. But if I'm up there to do magic, you know, like very like strolling magic or enjoy and being as a performer, I even sometimes like to start that too, like to borrow something that they have in their hands, or just to grab a pen and say, hey, can you please hold that pen? Let me show something interesting that you never seen before. And then I will get into it, build up, you know, the presentation, and then move the pen out of their hand, or do something that go like, wow, this is amazing, and seg into something else.
Perfect.
But I don't have a trick that I don't like. If I don't like it, I wouldn't do it.
Fair enough. Ridiculous question, really. What excites you about magic today, apart from obviously your own product?
What excites me? Well, I see a lot of YouTube videos about many ladies that when I grew up, I haven't seen any lady magicians. And now I see these ladies doing fascinating. They have such an amazing sleight of hands and good presentations. And I feel like the generation of magic should have both ladies and guys doing the magic.
Completely agree.
It's cool to see different, you know, different people styling, you know, like I feel like the young generation have more appealing of something more modern, you know, more like fit with time. When I started magic, it was like all tuxedo, it was black and white, it was the flowers and the silks, and all of this kind of gone.
Yeah.
And I feel like we're getting into the zone of using daily objects and using things that people are familiar with. And it's not like some alien
instead of weird
objects, you know? And it's great because there's a lot of amazing young magicians that are doing those things that seem so real that the audience appreciate it, you know? And that's excite me to see that generation moving forward in that style.
Absolutely. Yeah. I completely agree. As the father of a 7-year-old little girl who's into magic, I completely, completely agree. What's next? Can you tell us anything about what you're working on
now? That's a tough one.
Or is it all top secret? No, it's just you and me. No one's else. No one else is listening. It's just us, you girl. What's next?
Wow. I'm working on something new that will hit the market hopefully in a couple of months. But I can say that it's not related to invisible thread work. Yeah.
Ooh, there's a scoop. Yeah, something there's a scoop.
But I think in a way it has some kind of, it's difficult to say without giving too much. It has something that related in a way to threads, but it's not invisible thread. But it's really good. I feel like this is going to be appreciated with a lot of magicians because it's a classic item. That's innovations on a classic item that's been done, but in a way that it's all new again. Yeah, and I can't wait to put it up.
What a bombshell to end on, you girl. We always finish the show with 4 quick fire questions. Are you ready?
Sure.
Favorite pizza topping?
Mushrooms.
Favorite person or people who make music?
Peter Gabriel. Or Coldplay.
Favorite movie?
True Romance.
That's a good film. And finally, who would you rather fight? 1 massive Andy Gladwin or 100 tiny Joshua Jay?
You know the answer. The first one. Yeah.
Yigal, thank you so much for giving us so much of your time and sharing such valuable information with our listeners.
Thank you, Damon, for allowing me to share the knowledge with your magician viewers. It was an honor, and I hope we can talk again soon.
You take care. Lovely to see you.
Awesome. Cheers. Thank you.